never seen by humans before. We give you Glenn. Mr. Trey. Linda. Who also does a great, great blog. And Steve, and Stephen Thompson. Pop culture happy hour, everybody. One more.
I am only sad that I cannot see more of you. I'm so short. This is extremely exciting for us. Thank you so much for coming out. And I hope that you have been enjoying the sale and, you know, filling up on hats and shirts and so forth. We're going to do pretty much a regular show, and, you know, you'll hear what you normally hear. And in the middle...
But, but not edited is the problem.
Yeah, you're going to come away from this with a real appreciation for what Mike Katziff and Jess Gittner do for us.
That's right.
Both of them are.
Yeah. We did have a few people we wanted to introduce, in addition to those of us who are up here. Our producer, Jess Gittner, is here with us. Where are you, Jess?
Jess is kind of
somewhere.
Small. Can somebody hoist Jess onto their shoulders?
Can someone lift Jess?
I see her.
There she is.
There she comes. Yay! We're also extremely excited to have with us in town, visiting us, our producer emeritus and music director, Mike Katziff. Woo! Who is also here somewhere.
We probably could have arranged it so these people would be standing up here when we did that.
I was going to say, if we had only known. Okay. And also, there were a couple people who have been on the show who were going to be in the room. I don't know whether they're in the room at all.
I see one of them.
Chris Klimek. You might remember Chris from all of our shows about punching. Chris Klimek. I don't know if Tanya was here. Tanya was also going to be here.
I think we would have heard. Yeah.
Okay.
Seriously.
So what we're going to do is we'll have our first segment, and then we're going to do a very, very silly quiz in the middle. And then after the show, we will have a Q&A, and you can come up and ask us stuff if you have questions.
And you know, we were sort of saying, I mean, we know that some people actually traveled to be here, and we really wanted to make sure that everybody knows that after this is over, after we're done with the show, we'll be milling around, meeting and greeting people. Yeah. We're really excited about meeting people who listen to the show and really appreciative of all your support. So we'll be hanging around afterward, and we may even try to do an actual happy hour once this celebration has has come and gone.
And that's my primary agenda in this. It's just to really say thank you to all of you for being here, but also for listening to the show. This is an extremely Mickey and Judy show in the backyard kind of thing that we did that we love, and it's because people adopted it and have been so kind to us. So truly, bottom of my heart, thank you so much, and let's do a show.
All right.
Awesome. Music that means it is time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. And we are here at NPR headquarters at our very first live show ever. We are surrounded by friendly, lovely people who are making noise. And it is so incredibly exciting for us. Before we get started, we are going to talk today about some of our favorite things from this year, some of the things we're looking forward to next year. We're going to have a quiz about the year in pop culture. And then, as always, we will close the show with what is making us happy this week, other than this. Before we get started, let's go around the table. Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I am a writer and editor with NPR Music.
And Trey Graham, what do you do at NPR?
I edit movies coverage and other sundry business for NPR.org.
And Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
Well, I'm incredibly happy to see you guys, along with all of these guys. And the first thing we're going to talk about this week, see, it's not edited. The first thing we're going to talk about this week is our favorite moments of 2012. Glenn, do you want to get us started? You're always good for this.
Sure. The topic was defining moments, and I think you guys might be defining in a different way than I am. You're probably thinking it's sort of culturally defining. I'm thinking it more as funniest.
Are you going to give us a taxonomy definition?
This one time, that's a no. I thought about a bunch of different moments. The first one that obviously occurred to me was Tig Notaro's set. Tig Notaro, Live,
good choice.
Which she released as part of Louis C.K.'s stand-up set. That was something that was just beyond comedy. It was comedy, but also she was finding something on stage. For those of you who don't know, she was recently diagnosed with breast cancer. She had just broken up with her girlfriend. Her mother had just passed away. All this stuff was happening, but what was happening in that set was she was finding something. The audience was finding it with her, but I didn't choose that.
Glenn does this all the time.
All the time.
I'd like to give you the three runners up.
Exactly. Yeah. There are actually three. there was a moment in the musical episode of Thrilling Adventure Hour, which I might have mentioned once or twice on the past. How many of you listened to Thrilling Adventure Hour? All right. Have any of you started listening to it because I was hectoring you to start listening to it?
Oh, you're doing good for the world,
buddy. I have done
buddy.
A good thing. J.K. Simmons was the guest on this particular episode. Now, J.K. Simmons, y'all know who J.K. Simmons is, right? Okay. I knew who J.K. Simmons was. What I didn't know, how many of you knew that J.K. Simmons has, like, Broadway chops? Like, he's a singer guy.
Me.
Okay, I wasn't asking you. I was directing it out here.
He was in Guys and Dolls.
All right, so you're all more intelligent than I am. That's a low bar. But so he's on this show, and he plays... I see him as, like, gruff, gruff but lovable guy, right? He's J. Jonah Jameson. He's Schillinger in Oz. He's Dr. Emil Korda on Law & Order, right? Who always has... He's only around, like, maybe 6 or 7 episodes a year. And he always has a scene where he says something like, what did you do with their panties, Lyle? Like, that's his game. That's his game. So that's who I figured he was. But it turns out in this episode, he starts to sing, and he carries a tune really great, and then he hits this note, which y'all are going to have to just imagine, because we don't have it queued up. But the one I chose was a moment at the end of a sketch in the third episode of the first season of a show called Key and Peele. Everybody watch? Okay. There is a sketch called Auction Block. Okay, now this sketch, the premise of the sketch doesn't sound wacky, but what the premise is that there are these two slaves who are up for auction. They keep getting passed over, and as the sketch builds, they start to resent the fact that they're not getting sold, and they start to sell themselves, trying to sell themselves to these slave owners. Again, not a wacky premise, but what... In good sketch comedy, in good, well-structured sketch comedy, things build and you kind of feel it. You know that what you're in for, but the fact that you know what's coming isn't the thing. The details of that thing are what's important. So when people complain about sketches on SNL or they complain about sketches on Mad TV, that's because those sketches aren't really structured great because they're simply repeat.
They're just reiterating themselves.
Yeah. Exactly. This sketch has such a perfect, classic sketch comedy build that builds to a moment where Keegan-Michael Key, at the end of the sketch, is trying to call the various slave owners back. And he says, how about this? Have you mentioned this? Docile. Oh. Now, the word... Okay, now, I don't know what the show says about race in America, but I know what it says about sketch comedy in America, and that means that the choice of that word, docile, coming as it does at the right moment, really just... I don't know why it gets me the way it does, but that was the defining moment for me.
So what you're saying is that the year for you is defined by deeply wrong.
Yes. Well, you know what? That sketch and that show gets some energy from its subject.
Right.
But it uses that energy. It doesn't coast on it. There is such great, if you watch the sketch again, there's such good human detail in every moment. So that was the moment for me.
How wonderful.
Wow. My thing is going to take like 8 seconds.
I'm sorry.
Me too. I was going to say.
I was just going to talk about an album.
Well, now I want to hear you do it. Tell me about yours, Stephen Thompson.
Well, yeah, I mean, Glenn has these beautiful long wind-ups, and I sometimes am like, well, I'll just wing it.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess, you know, for me, I went in a little bit of a different direction in terms of what defined the year. And I looked at sort of my, you know, my primary area of interest, which is just in life, which is music, and sort of wanted to bring up that moment when Frank Ocean sort of came out as bisexual in the immediate run-up to the album Channel Orange, and sort of what that sort of said about that moment, not only in American culture, but in American society, and also as kind of a flashpoint for a year of one of the sort of dominant trends in music this year, I thought, which was just amazing R&B music. If you haven't heard Frank Ocean's Channel Orange, it's kind of like, I think everybody has heard Frank Ocean's Channel Orange at this point, but it's an amazing record. And it seemed to me to be sort of, to be sort of a tipping point for a lot of things in music. And also, you know, when you look at kind of the year in music in general, you had this amazing Miguel record, this amazing, a really great single by Usher. You know, there was just a ton of music that sort of keyed off of that incredible. See, I took this seriously. I didn't have a funny anecdote. I'm like, this is going to get a gigantic laugh. I didn't have a joke.
You also didn't have a button.
A button?
Yeah. There was no ending to that anecdote.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay.
Let's hear how great Trey does.
No pressure, buddy. But
no, I hear what Trey brought is amazing.
Wow, yeah, I just dug a hole for myself.
I hear pre-promised it was going to be like the most exciting thing of this or any year. No, you said
and funny.
Well,
oh my god,
this was clearly
cracking up.
Hype down. This was pretty clearly the year of the meme, right? You got your Irma Gerds, you got your angry cats.
You got your Irma Gerds.
Cats.
I don't got my Irma Gerds.
I didn't even know what Irma Gerd was when someone first told me that. I was like, "What is that? Like Irma Bomb?" I think it was you who I made explain it to me. Actually.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, I trust I explained it.
I'm
by
sorry,
sending
I didn't
you a
mean
link,
to interrupt your right? unbelievably great story.
Right.
the year in memes, right? And I'm sure you all have favorite memes. My favorite meme of the year was, and the defining moment of the year for me was texts from Hillary. In honor of Secretary Clinton, who is recuperating at home from a faint this morning, in case you haven't heard. But the guys, Stacey Lam and Adam Smith, who created this, had the sense to kill it before it got twee, right? It ran for about a week, and it was consistently funny for that whole week. And it returns from time to time when something happens, but it's not them. It's other people doing it. So text from Hillary is my defining moment, not least because it was thought up and first executed upstairs at Nelly's Sports Bar while I was playing trivia downstairs.
Very good. I got you, Trey.
So what did you accomplish that day?
Before I forget, incidentally, ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce Tanya Ballard-Brown. Woo! Yeah! Thank you, Tanya.
Okay, Tanya, you may leave.
I do not have my cough button, unfortunately. I apologize for coughing. That's the thing I'm noticing most so far. Yeah. Is that I don't know, my little mute button makes me go, that way I can go.
You know what else is different is the sense that you're losing the room.
No, not for me. That's pretty much same.
You think that all the time. Okay, so when I went to choose a moment from this year, I focused on the fact that I wound up going to 3 film festivals this year, which was new for me. I've only been to Silver Docks in the past. And this year I went to South by Southwest, and I went to Silver Docks, and I went to Toronto with Trey. I'm sorry, Toronto. And one of the real moments that I very much loved at Toronto was going to Joss Whedon's Much Ado About Nothing. And the reason for that was that... it is such a, and I wrote about this on the blog, but it's such a, it is such a loved, handmade kind of, it just feels very personal. And when you see a lot of films, even a lot of independent films, even a lot of really good independent films, you can still wind up feeling, it's something that I think, it might be apocryphal, but it's something that I've heard Julia Child used to say about Nouvelle Cuisine, which is, it's so beautiful that you can just tell somebody's hands have been all over it. And movies can be that way, too. And this movie, for me, it is a little bit raggedy. There are parts of it that are... I mean, it was made in, like, 12 days. And it feels a little... You know, it doesn't feel like it was rehearsed and fussed over for a year. And it's different. It feels a little loose. But I really welcomed that loose quality. And I also wanted to single out that moment because one of my other real favorites was the big, loud, noisy premiere of Cabin in the Woods, which he also worked on, which I went to at South by Southwest, which is just one of the most kind of explosively excited, positive, like that was the absolute ideal way to see that film. And so for me, those moments, having those opportunities to see something different, to go outside of where I normally experience that kind of thing, those sort of, you know, those moments were a big deal to me. big, big deal to me. And very much defining, and Much Ado is very much defining, partly just because it was the year of Joss Whedon. I mean, with that and Avengers.
Right.
I don't know if any of you heard of Avengers.
Who here likes Avengers? I threw that one in
at the end. Oh, also, he made Avengers. I don't know if you guys heard. So next we are going to move on and talk about some of our favorite performances of 2012. So, Glenn, you want to start us off again?
Sure. I had several candidates.
Is one of them Trey?
No. You know, on an ensemble show, there's always one performer who kind of jumps out at you for whatever reason. There's one that you just kind of feel an affinity with. I don't feel an affinity with this character, but certainly with this actor. On the show, Happy Endings, Eliza Coop, who plays Jane.
Nice.
Okay?
Nice pick.
I don't know why she just makes me laugh with everything that comes out of her mouth. It's the timing, it's the facial expressions, it's the body language, but there's just something about this character that I just really loved. Everybody on the universe is talking about Claire Danes and Damian Lewis. Of course, they're great. But in the episode Q&A, Damian Lewis, and I'm not going to spoil anything, people haven't seen it, but in the episode Q&A, Damian Lewis has to show a turn voice wordlessly. He has to act that turn, and then he has to, the script asks him to make a turn and then leave some mystery for the audience, because we can't really, the show has to go on, so we can't really know exactly what he's thinking. So he, in that moment, in that scene, he really knocked it out of the park. If you're listening to Thrilling Adventure Hour, you know who Mark Evan Jackson is. He plays Sparks Nevada, Marshall on Mars, the best comic timing, but the one I chose.
You are just filibustering. That's all you're
no,
doing.
No, because this is going to be really short. This is going to be really short because I already talked about this on the show. The performance of the year for me was the most surprising, which was Jack Black in Bernie.
That movie is so good.
It's really good, and he is so great. I figured I knew what this guy was selling. Yeah. You know, I figured, okay, so he's the big guy on SNL. Like, he's that guy. That's his energy.
Also the star of Kung Fu Panda.
Also the star of Kung Fu Panda. But yeah, I mean, he's done serious roles before, but he hasn't been this contained and specific. So that was just a great performance.
It is a great performance, and it's a great movie. And Bernie is still streaming, and it's around. And I definitely, if you're sort of picking up 2012 movies that maybe you didn't get to yet, definitely recommend that one. That movie is awesome. That movie is awesome. Yep. Also, Shirley MacLaine. I mean, come on, right? And Matthew McConaughey. It was the year of Matthew McConaughey. But I did not pick him. Steven, why don't you go next?
Well, I could have just as easily picked this for best moment, and maybe it would have been a better choice.
I liked your moment.
It was a perfectly good moment. Don't diss your moment.
I'm not dissing my moment. My favorite performance, Linda mentioned briefly South by Southwest, and it was not only was it a great moment, but it was kind of a representative moment for the year. I saw at a gigantic open-air sort of barbecue pit venue called Stubbs, I saw the band Fun. And talk about the year of, I mean, among other things, it was the year of Fun. And this was in March of this year. And looking, I mean, even though I was like 80 yards from the stage, you could see the like 10,000-watt smile of Nate Roos, the singer, as he's realizing before our eyes that his dreams have all come true. Because basically, as we know, at least for the first, out of the first like 8 or 9 months of the year, there were only 3 songs. In 2012. I don't know where the other songs went, but there was the Gautier, Somebody That I Used to Know, there was Carly Rae Jepsen, Call Me Maybe, and there was We Are Young by Fun. And this was at the time that all of a sudden the whole, you know, just America had suddenly gone bananas for this guy who had been toiling somewhat quasi-obscurity, you know, previously in a band called The Format. He'd been around a long time. And all of a sudden, first of all, also, the guy touches his hair even more than I do.
But it's a lot.
Which is to say, a lot.
I was going to say, some of you are in the back. It's a lot.
I have a shock collar to keep me from saying the word basically and also to touch my head.
Well, I think that's lovely.
Okay.
So, yes, we all have them. So anyway, so seeing, you know, sort of seeing one of the bands, sort of the bands of the year, give this performance and just having this million watts of joy just radiating over the crowd was not, I mean, I could have picked it for a moment just as easily, but I chose that as my favorite performance.
That's wonderful.
I like happiness.
You do. I was going to say a million watts of joy could be your like
that's the name of my
motto.
It's the name of my autobiography.
Yeah.
Actually, that's the hormones and sadness.
Yeah, hormones and sadness is your autobiography.
All right, Trey Graham, tell me your favorite performance of the year.
Well, like Glenn, I had a few difficulties narrowing it down. So I'm going to give you two performances in two different categories. If you are a regular listener to the show, you'll know that I was a tremendous fan of Jan Maxwell in the musical Follies. Classic show, terribly difficult role to pull off, and she just nailed it. I went back to see it twice. I took Linda to see it.
Yes, you did.
She deserves to be much more famous than she is, and she is awesome.
She was amazing.
Jan Maxwell.
She was amazing.
The other Broadway performance that really just blew me away this year was in the musical Once, which I may have talked about once or twice. A previously little-known actress named Kristen Milioti nailed the role of the girl.
The girl. Mm-hmm.
And they're just
guy. That is the name of the role.
That's the name of the character. It's just guy and girl.
It's the girl.
And it just completely convincing as this Czech girl adrift in Dublin, you know. And she's not that person at all. It's all acting.
Trey discovered acting.
But mostly what I wanted to say was that those two performances were kind of emblematic for me of a really strong year in theater, especially on Broadway, a just absolute gem of a new musical coming out of nowhere that wasn't particularly expected to be fabulous, and then a revival of an incredibly difficult landmark show that's expensive and a huge risk for anybody to produce. And so they gave me a great deal of pleasure. Now, on the...
but here's my real choice.
No, I just want to, you know, on the theory that we should always try to talk about things that some of you may have seen or might be able to see still. There was mention of the Avengers earlier, and I had a really good time watching that movie because of Mark Ruffalo and Tom Hiddleston. Two really terrific, closely observed performances ending in the best fight scene of all time.
Nope, given.
That is no lie. Excellent choices.
Yeah.
I like your choices, Jay Graham. Okay, so seriously, it really was the year of Matthew McConaughey. Not only is he wonderfully funny in Magic Mike, but also sad. Mm-hmm. Also, like, really...
Really dark.
It's dark, but it's also... You get how charismatic he is and how he believes he has a great life and all that stuff, but also how sad it is. And there are some real weaknesses in that movie, so it's very important to have... Did I say something about stripping? I feel like I accidentally said something about stripping. Or I've made a hand gesture. Anyway... but seriously, when we talked about Bernie, Bernie, as I said on the show, is this collision of Linklater, who I can go either way on, Jack Black, who I can go either way on, and Matthew McConaughey, who I can go either way on. And after we had this conversation, a bunch of people who watched the show had recommended to me that I watch The Lincoln Lawyer, which he's also very good in.
Yep.
He's really good, and I'm so pleased about the way that he kind of seemed to be on this trip to, like, Kate Hudson's boyfriendville.
Right.
And it was like...
Worse places to be.
And he was just kind of... It was a road to actorly nowhere.
Yeah, he was idling there for a while. And we've been on record really as kinda, really liking him when he was young. And...
Right. And I've also heard nothing but good things about Killer Joe, which I've not seen, but which he was also in this year. So big year for him, but I didn't pick him.
Good.
I picked Sutton Foster in Bunheads.
Oh, yes.
Bunheads to me is a very, very, very underappreciated, very wonderful show on ABC Family. It is about to come back in January. I just saw the premiere.
Well, let down.
That performance, I really miss, on television, I really miss broads. I really miss broads, dames, that kind of thing. She manages to be very, very vulnerable. But also very funny and incredibly sharp. And she has this relationship with her mother-in-law, played by Kelly Bishop, who's also incredibly great. And this show, a lot of you may know, is from Amy Sherman-Palladino, who did The Gilmore Girls. And it has a lot of tonal similarities to The Gilmore Girls. But I actually like it a little bit better. I think she's a little more, for me, fully realized and a little more interesting, and I like her delivery of the dialogue. And I to me, it's the kind of performance that used to make up all of good television, was these kind of accessible, just, I was going to say lovely, these accessible, really likable, really thoughtful, but still funny and light performances. And I feel like those that doesn't get enough credit anymore.
Absolutely.
So I picked Sutton Foster.
We love Good Sutton choice. Foster.
And also, she sings, she dances.
She sings, she dances.
You know?
If like, you haven't seen, if you haven't seen on our recommendation the Tony Awards video from Anything Goes with
absolutely.
Sutton Foster leading, Sutton
absolutely.
Foster, sorry.
Ooh, yeah, you know, we can't even take that
retake.
Out.
Retake, yes, we can. with Sutton Foster leading a just gigantic horde of tap dancing happy people. It's, yeah. Oh, it's awesome.
No, it's a good point because, I mean, there's a lot of quirky characters, quirky female characters, but there's a layer of quirk in this character,
right.
But there's a lot of substance as well.
Right. Yeah. I just am crazy about it. So the last thing we were going to talk about on this topic is something we are looking forward to in 2013. Glenn, I already know what yours is, but...
Yeah, I mean, if you had asked me this question even last week, I wouldn't have this answer, but it's actually Man of Steel, the Zack Snyder film. I have been filled with dread because it's Zack Snyder, and he did Sucker Punch, and Sucker Punch is terrible. And, you know, I mean, I worry about the synergy between Christopher Nolan and Zack Snyder because there is a sort of humorlessness and grimness and melodrama sort of thing that could happen there if it goes wrong. But I was really encouraged by this latest trailer. There seems to be paying attention to a conflict which hasn't been foregrounded in the films, at least, which is about what if Ma and Pa Kent were actually humans. So this film is going to come out in June, Man of Steel. It's the 75th anniversary. And 75 years is a long time for a character to be around. And I just wish, you know, between now and then, somebody would come out with something like a...
Oh, stop it.
Like a...
Oh, stop it.
Like maybe a history... Not a history. But something... Because there's so many different kinds
sure,
of characters.
Sure, sure.
Something that really kind of shows you how the character's changed over the years, how it reflects the culture.
Would it be a book?
Well, okay, it could be a book.
I would buy a book like that.
It right. should be called, like, Superman... The
let's call it okay, not this, but Superman the Unauthorized Biography. Oh, I mean,
yeah.
Not that, but something like that. And you want some time with it, you want some time with it beforehand because you want to be able to read the book. So,
sure.
Like, April, let's pick April as a time.
We are so gonna have to cut this out.
This is the most shameless thing I've ever seen.
$25.95 available
sorry.
As an ebook.
Okay,
so
now,
Man
that's
of Steel.
The most shameless
yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
So Man of Steel. Man of Steel is my answer.
That was the smartest thing I ever have seen in my life.
You're going to have to cut it out. You're going to have to cut it out.
Holy,
I have no illusions. You're going to
you
have to cut it out.
You are an evil genius.
No.
Stephen Thompson, looking forward to in 2013. I'm sorry, 2013.
Right.
Yes. Well, no, it's 2013.
Just do it.
Okay. In May... There is a movie coming out about an animated movie about a race car driving snail. Now, before that movie shows on screens, they will be airing a new 15-minute trailer for Les Miserables. Around the time it's like going to come out on DVD.
Uh-huh.
It's going to have like a making of featurette, but how they managed to take the movie and distill it onto one silver disc.
What have they done?
It's going to be incredible.
What have they done?
Sweet Jesus, what have they done?
Oh, God. It's all inside jokes today, isn't it?
Pick your real one. No. Did you write a book you want to talk about?
You know, it's funny. We'd sort of talked about doing something really general. Like, we should just sum up. It can be things we've talked about before. And then we kind of realized it's really just inside jokes. Because if you care enough to come here...
It's true.
Speaking of if you care enough, there is a lovely lady who apparently can't get in the front door. Can we all just give her a wave?
Come around.
Did you want to actually, is that it?
Do you have
no.
Do you have a thing? Could we get on with this?
No.
Like, I need the giant clock on the wall. I can't impose discipline like this.
I want to talk about a couple of, and this is ordinarily where I would be playing short sound clips, but there are a couple of new artists who are sort of like musicians, who are sort of in the process of bubbling up who are going to put out records early in the year that I'm very excited about. I love kind of the first quarter of the year music-wise because it's kind of where they sort of front-load all the discoveries to sort of see what's, you know, what sticks and what's going to sort of trickle out for the whole rest of the year. So two artists to really keep an eye on, both of which people may have already heard, but there's a young country singer named Casey Musgraves who has a song called Merry Go Round. That is really remarkable, and it's kind of like just a very young, like I think she's like 22.
Oh, they've used at least something of hers on Nashville. That's why.
Right, which would make a lot of sense. And yeah. it's just a very interesting kind of, at least this song is a very interesting look at kind of small town life. A lot of it is sort of tropes about suburbia that you don't usually hear applied to small town life in country songs, but also a very hooky song, very smart song. Very intrigued about her, Casey Musgraves. The other one is a band called Rye, R-H-Y-E. My colleague Ann Powers over at NPR Music described it as the male Sade, which has its promise. If you think about it, actually, I would say is the, I guess also male Spandau Ballet. But they've got this beautiful single called "The Fall" whose video is floating around on the internet and contains something you almost never see in videos, which is good acting. You don't see a lot of good acting in videos, but it's beautiful. It's got this amazing piano hook to it, and I'm just excited. You know, after having spent the last couple months just sort of digesting 2012 and getting all the year end coverage out, I'm just salivating over listening to things I haven't already heard.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Trey Graham, looking forward to in
22. Well, you want to do that again?
No.
We'll do it live.
All right, so this is going to disappoint those of you who are looking for something really new and original. I'm just going to come back to something I've talked about before. I think we played a little clip from it on one of the podcasts. The cabaret artist, singer, songwriter, performance guy Tim Minchin has a little show called Matilda, which has been a gigantic hit in London and is going to be the next Les Mis. It's not Les Mis, but it's going to be the next, I don't know, it's going to be the next Cats or something. It's big, it's funny, the music is gorgeous, and it is opening in previews on March 4th. Opening night officially is April 11th, and it is going to make stars of these four young performers, and it is going to be a huge hit. So when we drop this, we will hook you up with some videos again with Tim Minchin, because he's a weird guy.
Wonderful. I had a couple of choices, but in the end, I went with something very, very, very obvious, which is the final episodes of Breaking Bad, which are coming up. I also considered, I assume there's a wedding coming up on Parks and Recreation before. I fear it may be, in its closing moments, but I assume there's a wedding coming up, which I assume will be my favorite moment of the year. on television. And I also do want to mention, there's this movie Gangster Squad coming out with Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone. It could basically just be them standing there saying to each other, blah, 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 blah. And it would probably be one of my favorite movies of the year. I seriously considered making Emma Stone at the Oscars my performance.
Oh, yeah, she's great.
Because what it takes to give the Oscars life for 30 seconds... is very, very, piece of work. Yeah. So that was mine.
Awesome.
So that means it is my favorite time.
Actually, it's my favorite time. Hold on 1 second. This is not to tear down the fourth wall, but hold on.
This is true.
This is the part we usually edit out.
This is what happens. Every time we have a break, everybody has to open a can or take a giant gulp of water. All right. We have a quiz. Now here's what's going to happen. I'm going to ask them some questions, and then I'm going to ask whether one of you... I have four questions here saved out to be answered by some of you if you would like to take a question. All right. Glenn Weldon.
Yep.
Of all the characters on all of NBC's fall shows in 2012, which one did the network reportedly tell advertisers tested the highest with audiences? Was it...
Ah, good. Ah, thank you. Okay.
The monkey from Animal Practice. The gay couple from The New Normal, which the network tested as a single character. A telepathic horse from Revolution, a talking baby from Guys with Kids.
Huh. I'm going to go with the talking baby. I always go with the talking baby.
It's the monkey.
It's the monkey. Even I knew that.
It's the monkey from Animal Practice. All right, Trey Graham.
Yes, ma'am.
What is the official title of a Taylor Swift hit from 2012? Is it? Is it? We Are Never Getting Back Together. We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together. We Are Never Ever Ever Getting Back Together. Or We Are Never Never Ever Getting Back Together.
I believe it is number four. This I actually have heard. And it, and the grammar of it annoys the life out of me.
Those, you might be right about the words, mm-hmm. but the title is We Are Never, Never Ever Getting Back Together. Okay. I'm sorry, Trey.
Boo. Boo. Everybody boo Trey.
Everybody boo me.
Boo.
Thank you.
Stephen Thompson.
Yes.
The producers of Smash have announced one of the...
I just want to say I was one of the people who hated this show first. Trailblazer.
The producers of Smash have announced one of the following changes for the upcoming season. Which one is it?
Cancellation?
Alas, no.
Is it? Catherine McPhee will sing at least one so-called belter ballad every week.
Oof.
Deborah Messing will not wear so many scarves. There will be a storyline involving the crazy world of intellectual property. Or Angelica Houston's character will get a pet monkey.
You know, they would have me back with the pet monkey. I'm going to go with the little case of the McFever.
Believe it or not, it's the scarves.
It's the scarves. All right. Yep. I knew that.
They know their audience so well.
All right. Who wants a question? Question?
Oh, okay.
Would you like to answer a question? All right. We'll ask
where's
you. A,
where's our audience mic?
Do we have a mic?
There we go. Audience
mic. Look at that.
By the way, Kevin Waite is our audio engineer.
Yay. Awesome.
If you like the way that tiny desk concerts sound, it's largely because of Kevin, among other things. If you like the way our live concerts that we do on the site, it's largely because of Kevin. Kevin is a genius.
All right. Thank you, Kevin. All right. Okay, so which of these is not a real sequel due in 2013?
Not a real sequel.
I'm going to read you a list. It's kind of a long list. You have to pick out the one that's not a real sequel.
Okay.
Fast and Furious 6, Paranormal Activity 5, Scary Movie 5, Scooby-Doo 4, Iron Man 3, The Hangover 3, Bad Santa 2, The Smurfs 2, or Kick-Ass 2. One of those is not real.
Do you need it again?
Fast and Furious 6, Paranormal Activity 5, Scary Movie 5, Scooby-Doo 4, Iron Man 3, Hangover 3, Bad Santa 2, Smurfs 2, Kick-Ass 2.
I mean, I think I know that some are going to be, and I feel like I'm assuming some will be. So I think I'm going to go with the Scooby-Doo one.
You are
yeah!
You almost started crying in that moment.
That was such an incredibly unfair question, and you completely
you
nailed
it.
Good for you.
My name is Christina. It's my birthday, and I love you.
Happy birthday!
We love you, too. That's so awesome.
Wow, it's audience one, us nothing.
Yeah.
I know which I prefer.
All right.
All right, Glenn Weldon, which of the following actors does not appear in Best Exotic Marigold Hotel?
Oy.
None of them.
Judi Dench, Tom Wilkinson, Jim Broadbent, Maggie Smith, and Bill Nye.
Okay, I'm going to talk you through this like it's Millionaire. I'm not. Broadbent is not in.
You are right,
all
sir.
Right.
Yay.
Thank you.
Trey Graham.
Yes, ma'am.
Which of the following is least expensive? I thought your vest made this a good question for you. You're clearly
it's
the classy.
It's a Christmas present from my mom. Thanks,
you're the,
Mom.
You're the classy one. That's a compliment. All right.
I wear pants.
Which of these is least expensive? A 1.7-ounce bottle of Britney Spears Circus Fantasy perfume. A 2.5-pound bag of marshmallow circus peanuts, an IKEA children's circus tent, or one dozen red clown noses. I found listings for prices of all of these on the internet.
Most expensive?
Least expensive.
Least expensive.
Britney Spears perfume, yeah. Marshmallow circus peanuts,
uh-huh.
Children's circus tent from IKEA, or a dozen clown noses.
A dozen clown noses.
You are right.
Yep.
Just for the record, the Britney Spears perfume is $23. The 2.5 pounds of marshmallow circus peanuts are $18, roughly. And the circus tent is $20. But you can get a dozen red phone clown noses for $6.25.
Wow.
Stephen Thompson, the People's Choice Awards offers an award for best TV and movie fan followings. In other words, they let fans vote on the best fans.
All right.
The movie nominees include the Twihards and Potterheads, sure, along with the Ringers from Lord of the Rings and the Tributes from The Hunger Games. But what is the fifth nominee? Is it Hulk's Horde, who are pushing for Mark Ruffalo's
Hulk? I thought you were going to say something other than Horde.
Horde.
With an H.
Now, see, you ruined my joke, because the next answer I had on here was, what have I done? Is it the Rum Runners, who are fans of Pirates of the Caribbean? Is it the Move It's, who are fans of the Madagascar movies?
I'm sorry, that one is from your brain. That one is not really I know your brain, Holmesy.
Or is it a group of women who call themselves 00 Heaven?
Ugh. Wow.
Wow.
Hulk's Horde, Rum Runners, Move It's.
Well, I'm sorry, I can't remember the one I made up. Okay.
And 00 Heaven.
I'm going to go with Rum Runners.
You are right.
Huh. Whoa!
All right, audience question. Where's our microphone? Where'd our microphone go? Who would like a question? Anyone? Question? I saw that hand first, right before, right behind, right hand there. Perfect.
Hey.
Hello. What's your name?
My name is Shannon.
Hi, Shannon. I'm Linda.
Hi, Linda.
Which of the following is the real premise behind the upcoming television show Built? Is it a Lifetime sitcom about three beautiful sisters who co-own an architecture firm? Is it a Game Show Network game show where you essentially play Jenga for a $5,000 prize? Is it a National Geographic Channel series of specials about the construction of massive monuments such as the Sphinx? Or is it a Style Network reality show about a home design and construction firm staffed exclusively by male models?
Man, I really hope it's the last one. What do you guys think? My posse says two. Trey says three. I'm ignoring him.
It is actually the male models.
Oh! Wow. I'm just going to take a moment to think about that.
But thank you, though. It's a very fair answer. They're meant to not make any sense. Alrighty. Thank you so much. Glenn.
Yeah.
Of the top 20 movies of 2012 in terms of box office, mm-hmm. domestic box office, as of this writing, how many are live-action films that are not part of an existing or planned franchise? The answers are 2, 4, 6, and 8.
Four.
You are right, sir.
All right.
Whoa.
The four are Ted, 21 Jump Street.
It was good.
It's good, but close on the question of franchise. You see what I'm saying?
I see.
Safe House and The Vow. All right. Trey Graham.
Yes, ma'am.
Us Magazine chose which of these phrases to headline an October 28th story. We do a little celebrity gossip now and then. Julia Roberts flaunts $1,500 shoes, shows off kids.
Man.
Jennifer Aniston flaunts cleavage, shows off engagement ring. Jennifer Aniston flaunts engagement ring, shows off cleavage. Uh-uh. Or Bradley Cooper flaunts chest hair, shows off watch.
I am going to go. This is the one that's real.
You're picking the one that's real. Real except one.
Yeah. I'm going to go with the second Jennifer Aniston.
You're going with Jennifer Aniston flaunts engagement ring, shows off
shows cleavage.
It is the other way around. Flaunts cleavage, shows off engagement ring.
Oh, that's not fair.
See, and I'm guilty only of flaunting my kids.
Yeah, it's true.
Oh, it wouldn't be a podcast without a mention
of
kids.
That's true. Stephen Thompson, who got attention this year for saying of Kim Kardashian, stupidity is certainly celebrated. Was it, some of these people know, was it Barack Obama, John Hamm, Simon Cowell, or Tina Fey?
Mm. I thought you were going to list a bunch of stupid people.
No.
I'm going to say Barack Obama.
It was John Hamm.
Yep.
Oh.
The great. All right, audience question. Mike, there you go. Oh. We got one more left. Which of these was not a task on the most recent season of Celebrity Apprentice? Creating an original show at medieval times. Creating a viral video to promote a mop. Creating an improv puppet show. Or creating a brochure to sell metal detectors. We got medieval times, mop promotion, puppet show, and metal detectors.
Okay, that's tough because I don't think I've seen any of those Celebrity Apprentice. I
feel so you're like... a better person than we are. Well, then
well,
we are.
Then we are.
I feel like I heard something about medieval times. Except for maybe that was an episode of...
Well, they're all real except one. So you have to pick the fake one.
I'm just going to suggest that...
I don't know. I'm standing next to another librarian who does puppet shows. So
that's our demographic. So, don't worry. Yeah. I was going to say, you're not really narrowing it down.
Poor audience.
So I'm kind of drawn to the puppet show answer as the fake one.
Okay. It is the metal detector.
No.
All of the other ones are real.
See, I would have been with you because think improv theater of any kind, even involving puppets, which are great... is way too highbrow for Celebrity Apprentice.
No, this involved like Clay Aiken and Arsenio Hall making a puppet show.
Oh my God. Huh.
Good times, good times.
Just think of all the great TV I wasn't watching while that episode was on.
Glenn Weldon, what book led, and this is the only one that does not have multiple choice answers.
Okay.
What book led writer Erica Jong to say, I couldn't find anything that turned me on other than the fact that he gives her a rare copy of Tess of the D'Urbervilles?
50 Shades of Grey.
Yay!
I knew it was an easy one. You get an easy one time and again. Trey Graham.
Yes, ma'am.
ABC has ordered a reality competition series in which celebrities engage in what sport? Is it rhythmic gymnastics, diving, archery, or bowling?
Bowling.
Diving.
Diving. Oh.
Celebrity diving. Seems like a good idea, doesn't it?
What could possibly go wrong?
Can it be celebrity cliff diving? Because that would be awesome.
Just diving, diving.
It's just sitting there.
Stephen Thompson.
Linda Holmes.
Your last question. After experiencing one of the worst restaurant reviews that the New York Times has ever offered.
We know where this is going.
Spiky-haired restaurateur Guy Fieri closed out 2012 by doing what? One. Debuting his line of hair care products called Guy's Goos. Making his Broadway debut in Rock of Ages. Being immortalized in a bronze sculpture that sold for $26,000 on eBay. Or splitting his pants while skiing with Barbara Walters for an upcoming special.
Oh, man, I hope it's the last one. I'm going to go with the bronze sculpture.
It is Rock of Ages. Wow. He did a little walk. It was just a little walk-on. He played someone named Guy, and I was like, that's not stretching, you know? All right, final audience question.
All right, let's do this over here.
Let's do it over there. Hollywood Reporter critic Tim Goodman said all of the following things about new shows that aired in 2012. What did he say about ABC's Work It? So these are all real Tim Goodman quotes.
Oh, God.
Should all be reading Tim Goodman. He goes by Bastard Machine on Twitter. He's very funny and a very good guy. And said all of these things, and one of them is about Work It, which was on for like two episodes. When the bile bubbles up contemplating what heinous element of a series to slaughter first, you've got a problem. That's one.
That's A.
Shouldn't there be some kind of mandatory transparency law that the person who scheduled it on Wednesday step forward and be pelted with fruit? That's two. Welcome to one of the most annoying and condescending shows you'll ever hopefully not watch. That's three. And it plays like an idea written on a napkin, if that. That's four. So we have the bile bubbling up. We have the mandatory transparency law and the pelting with fruit. We have the annoying and condescending show you'll hopefully not watch and an idea written on a napkin.
I'll have to go with number three.
Number three, welcome to one of the most annoying, condescending shows you'll ever hopefully not watch was about Emily Owens, MD. The bile was about Work It. The pelted with fruit was about the neighbors. And the idea written on a napkin was about partners, which...
Oh, yeah.
Some of us got hosed on that
one. Partners.
What's your name? I'm sorry.
Matt Marr.
Sorry.
Thanks for playing, buddy.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Matt. Actually, you're going to have to leave.
Yeah. The thing is, they don't usually get these questions right either. You'll
it's
notice.
True.
I mean,
did I get any? I think I got one.
Yeah. It was a tough one.
But if we're keeping score. Which let's do.
It was a tough quiz. All right, and that brings us to our final segment. What is making us happy this week? Glenn Weldon, what's making you happy this week?
Okay, a comic book called Hawkeye. It's only in its fifth issue right now.
Hawkeye.
It's by Matt Fraction and two artists who are trading off storylines, Daniel Aja and Javier Pulido. This book neatly does away with every barrier to entry you have in superhero comics. There is no continuity to know. There is no crossover. There are no costumes. There are no powers. It's just a dude with a bow. It's Hawkeye from the Avengers, the guy who just has the arrows.
Like a bow, not like a bow.
No. I don't get into his personal life, but it's just a dude with a bow and arrow. And the premise of the comic is what happens to Hawkeye when he's not with the Avengers, when he's not being a superhero. So
it's just him folding his laundry. And...
There is some of that.
Because that's what you do when you're not a superhero.
It's basically about him hanging out in his apartment in New York, and the conceit is he is such a decent guy that he can't not help people. So every issue is, like, every story is like one issue or two. It's really tight. Now, you can find these issues, if you want to, and you should, in comic book stores now, because this has phenomenally successful. It's been reprinted a lot. You can also find them online at Comixology or the Marvel app for your tablet. The trade paperback of these first issues isn't coming out until March. But pick it up. It's funny, it's witty, it's smart, and it's just dynamite. It's good comics. So Hawkeye is my pick.
Wonderful. Trey Graham, what's making you happy this week?
What's making me happy this week is, I think, also probably a thing that's making Glenn happy. Two guys from the web video production company Rooster Teeth. Mm-hmm. Their names are Kerry Shawcross and Chris DeMarais, I think. They are both gigantic Lord of the Rings fans. And they figured out that they could walk, or that it's actually not as far as the three-month journey of the Hobbits, from Hobbiton to Mount Doom, because those locations are actually not as far apart as they would appear to be. They're actually only 120 miles apart. And so they challenged themselves to take 6 days and walk from Hobbiton to Mount Doom. The show is called A Simple Walk into Mordor. And it's these guys... camping out, chasing sheep and cows and chickens and that sort of thing, because they're from, I think, New York, and they're from somewhere anyway, and they've never been in, like, rural New Zealand before, so they're acting like fools. And naturally, they are making the hike wearing brown cloaks and fake hobbit feet. I just got the press release yesterday about episode 2, and I had ignored the first press release about episode 1, but I had a few spare moments yesterday. I watched both episodes, and it's kind of hilarious. So the first one is like 5 minutes. The second one is just shy of 11 minutes, and I would expect there to be 2 or 3 more, because they are just at the point where they're on day 3. In which Kerry Shawcross develops an unfortunate chafing in the vicinity of his Bilbo Baggins. Sure. So, A Simple Walk into Mordor.
Thank you, Trey.
just
thank you
Google
for that.
That.
Thank you for that, Trey Graham. Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week?
Well, I've had a number of people, I often talk about programming that my kids like in the hopes that other people's kids might enjoy it as well. And on our Facebook page, facebook.com/PCHH, several people have sort of popped up and said, oh, if your kids like this, they might like this. If they like this, they might like this. And several people over the course of however many months had recommended that I show them Gravity Falls on the Disney Channel. And there was a lot of, like, it's on the Disney Channel, but it's really more of a Cartoon Network kind of thing, which I thought was kind of great.
I get that.
And so I'm like, I should scope it out, see if I like it, then I'll see if the kids like it, you know? So I'm upstairs with my laptop open, watching, like, the first 5 minutes of the first episode of Gravity Falls. And the kids come bounding up the steps, and they're like, Dad, why are you watching Gravity Falls? and they're immediately going over and sort of like, well, the voice of Mabel is also the voice of the girl with the rabbit ears on Bob's Burgers.
Really?
And basically spouting all of the trivia that I would bore them with. And so I think part of it is that show, which really is a fun show, but also my looming obsolescence.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
Good.
Nice.
You mean they can think for themselves?
Yeah. Who knew?
It's exhausting, isn't it? Okay, so what is making me happy this week? Now, I went this week and I saw The Hobbit, my friend Glenn.
Yep.
Now, some of you know, this is my first good exposure to The Hobbit, as my past efforts to read it did not end with me reading it. So we went to the movie, and although I cannot actually claim that the movie necessarily made me happy, it's kind of long. It was kind of long for me. Not enough tea party.
Oh, God.
Not enough party
this again.
Singing. But I will say, there is the riddle scene between Martin Freeman and Andy Serkis.
Yep.
Is really wonderful and really is the moment watching that movie when I thought, oh, I see why people like these. Whereas the rest of it, I was kind of like, this is not for me. This is not for me, not for Linda's.
They walk a lot. There's lots of walking.
There's a lot of walking, but there's also a lot of talking. But I'm here to focus on the part that made me happy.
Good.
Which is that scene, which for me to see that and be like, oh, I totally get it. I get what the charm is. I get why people like it. I get why people think Andy Serkis is so great.
Mm-hmm.
Totally enjoyed it, and that part absolutely made me happy.
Okay, now this movie is 3 hours long. What trailers?
I actually am going with a group of friends tomorrow at 3:05 to Silver Spring, where Linda lives, to see The Hobbit in IMAX, specifically because there is a 9 or 11 minute exclusively screening before the IMAX shows of The Hobbit for Star Trek.
Right.
I am that nerd.
I was going to say, I know you to be many kinds of nerd, but not that one as much. Oh, that surprises
totally
me
that
a little
nerd.
Bit. All right. Well, thank you very much, guys. I'm glad that there is so much making you happy. I certainly hope there is a lot making all of you all happy this week as we careen toward the end of the year.
Oh, yeah.
And the end of this episode.
And the end of this episode.
And the fact that we managed to get through the entire What's Making Us Happy segment without any of us being like, well, this is what's making us happy.
Yeah.
But it kind of is.
You all know that.
It totally is.
And so you can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me in the blog at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen, Stephen. You can follow Trey at Trey Graham. Trey with an E. Graham like a cracker. You can follow Glenn at G.H. Weldon, W-E-L-D-O-N.
It's the music.
You can follow our producer, Jess Gittner, at Jess Gittner, G-I-T-N-E-R. You can follow our esteemed music director and producer emeritus, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provided us with this music, which you are listening to right now. So thank you all for being here, and thank you all for being here.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you who have sat through this so wonderfully and been such a help to us. And we will see you all next week.
Thanks.